You've watched, known, and loved her since back in the day in movie classics like Clueless, Bring It On, and Can't Hardly Wait. More recently, you saw her on this season's premiere of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. She's here on the show this week to tell us what it was like to be a part of TV's most frenetically paced comedy. She is Nicole Bilderbach. I'm Jerry Strauss, and this is The Laugh Track.
Do you need your weekly comedy fix? Relax while we visit the sitcoms you love, the jokes you remember, the characters you will never forget, and the stars that bring them to you. Sit back. It's The Laugh Track with Jerry Strauss.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to The Laugh Track with Jerry Strauss. He is I am him, and I'm here with you again this week, but just barely. Let me explain. We've got a great conversation this week. We're talking to one of my old buddies, one of my old OGs in the interviewing world, well before I dove into podcasting, Nicole Bilderbach, Nikki, too many, and she is here with us to break down her experience just this year, being a huge part of this year's season premiere of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, playing Captain Kim, a pivotal character in that episode. But you may have known her or seen her face. You'll recognize her from movies like Clueless, Bring It On, Can't Hardly Wait. She's been a part of big screen, small screen stuff that you love ever since the 90s and beyond. She's got a great life story and a really amazing, enduring, consistent career that you can't help but admire. So she's here to break it down for us, being a part of maybe one of today's most popular comedies, certainly maybe the heralded forerunner for top single-camera comedy now that The Office has faded away and now that Parks and Rec have faded away. Brooklyn Nine-Nine has kind of taken the throne, right? And being a part of that world, certainly a unique challenge, very different than being in a studio setting, being in front of a studio audience. Totally different vibe we're talking about today. And again, Nikki's so great at breaking everything down, even more so because, as I said, I'm here this week, but for this interview, I wasn't there much. I was feeling under the weather. My voice was shot, and Nikki was cool enough to kind of take the reins, so to speak. So you're going to hear a lot of her, which is probably the best situation for you anyway. Less of me, which is another bonus for you guys. Taking a bit of a backseat this week, but we had a great conversation regardless. We made it work, and we're so glad to bring this to you. It's Nicki Bilderbach, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and so much more here on The Laugh Track.
How are you?
I'm great. It's you know, a good busy time here in Los Angeles for us actors, and with the being pilot season, and I'm also prepping for a little temporary relocation to Dallas, Texas, my hometown, to shoot a series. So it's a good chaos.
Awesome.
And how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing okay. I do have to say though that you sound very positive and upbeat, but I kind of remember an email from last week where you sounded like you wanted to destroy people. I just remember there was like some negativity about everything you had to.
It's not about pilot season. It's about the LA traffic.
Well, it was you having to deal with it every day to audition.
Yeah,
I think.
It's so not fun. It really is not. And I'm not a complainer. I always like to try to look at the bright side of things in a moment. But I got to tell you though, when there's no escaping LA traffic. Like, it's just everywhere. Like, it's not even just the highways. It's like you try to exit off the highways and take the side streets, and then there's construction everywhere. And you're like, really? It's like being trapped in a way.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
Yeah.
So listen, Nikki Bilderbach on the line, old buddy, old pal, veteran of podcast projects of mine. So always a go-to. Nikki,
this is like our 120th one we've done.
You know what? You're like my, I was thinking about this today. You're like, and this is going to age me, but I know the Johnny Carson show. Like when he had nothing going on, he would bring Don Rickles on just for the heck of it. you know?
Oh, how funny. Uh-huh.
You're my Don Rickles. You're just that go-to.
So I'm an old man, is what you're trying to say.
Well, he wasn't that old at the time, so
is it Don Rickles? Wasn't. No, you're right. You're right. And you know what? I'm honored to be your Don Rickles, so there you go.
Well, what I mean by that is you're always someone I think about bringing on anything I do, because your career is so diverse that there's always something that fits. There's always some relevance to what I'm doing, to what.
Well, I get around. I get around is basically.
You can stop now. We've already got our clickbait.
Oh, that's right. You're right. You're right. Okay, I need to know when to stop.
Recent star of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I get around. That's it. We're good. You have done every type of everything that there is to do, so you can talk about it all. Plus, you know about everything. You're just so seasoned and such a, you know, I consider you a very cerebral person, because everything we've ever talked about, you have a lot of thoughts about it and you put a lot of thought into it.
Oh, well, thank you for that. Well, you know, it's bound to happen after I've been out here in Los Angeles. I've had a professional career for, 26 years. So it's bound to happen. You want to hope you gain a little knowledge here and there. And you know, you want to hope you have a wide variety of all different kinds of experiences and jobs. So, but I do appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, I mean, we're here to talk about Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Let's go to the beginning. How did that opportunity come about?
It's so funny you ask. I actually have a really funny, wacky, crazy story about how Brooklyn Nine-Nine came about. I was on vacation, and of course, you know, it was at the end of July last year, and, you know, the 1 week that I choose to go out of town and spend quality time with my family is the 1 week that the industry picks up, because, you know, it always kind of slows down a little bit in like May, June, you know what I mean? There's always that little slow period. And then, you know, so, you know, I was like, oh, I'm going to go on vacation with my family and, you know, not worry about anything, not think about anything, but also too, knowing that episodic season was about to start up. And I'm like, of course, with my luck, watch what will happen. And lo and behold, I'm in Florida, not even 2 days. And what happens? My agent is calling me. I have all these auditions. I have to self-tape. I have to, you know, I also end up missing an in-person director session with a big director for a Melissa McCartney movie. Like, of course, it ended up being like the busiest week of my career. The 1 week that I'm laying out on the beach. So, you know, naturally that happens that way, right? It always works out that way. So when Brooklyn Nine-Nine came in, basically I had to self-tape because, you know, obviously I was out of town, so I couldn't be in LA for the casting. And so I tried to do it in an evening at, we rented these houses in Florida and the lighting was awful. I tried to do it at night. I couldn't, my nephew, you know, was off with his little friends. I was like, who am I going to get as like my camera person to literally hold my iPhone up? My nieces were going out that night, you know, trying to pick up boys, you know, down the street. And my parents just are not the people to do it. Like, they just can't, like, it's just too much. So they're not, you know, you'd think, okay, well, yeah, my dad could probably hold the phone, but then, you know, it's like, we're not used to reading lines and know what to do. So anyway, I lost my lighting that night. So I ended up sending an email off to my agents going, God, I don't know if I can get this to you guys in time, yada, yada, yada. I lost my camera guy, aka my, you know, my nephew and my nieces. I can't find them. And so I'm thinking, okay, not trying to get out of it. I was very limited resources, right?
Right.
And I didn't want to turn in a self-tape. You want it to be good, especially for a big show like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And so the next morning, I'm laying out on the beach, literally. My agent starts calling me, put yourself on tape now. They want you bad. Just put yourself on tape. And I'm like, so I'm, you know, trying to explain to him, trying to, I guess they, you know, they weren't letting up. And so, I mean, which is very flattering and I felt very grateful. But I was like, how am I going to do this? Like, literally, family members are spread out everywhere. And I was like, okay, let me get my nieces. Mind you, I'm in the bikini with suntan lotion all over me. I'm burnt. I'm tan. I have to run in from the beach. I run back to the house. I shower as fast as I can. And at this point, you know, because it's Florida, so we're 3 hours ahead. So we were also, I had to start getting ready for dinner at some point. I still had to learn my lines. It was so chaotic. And I threw on makeup. And mind you, you know when you get tan, this is the thing for women. You guys don't have to worry about this. But when you're tan or burnt, your foundation does no longer matches your face. So I'm like trying to put on makeup. And it just does not look good, right? It just does not look how it's supposed to. My hair is still damp. I still have on my bikini bottoms. I just throw on a blouse because, you know, I didn't pack any appropriate attire. I didn't pack business attire. And I literally had all like Hawaiian dresses and bikinis. And so I just threw on this one, like this one cami top over like my bikini. And thankfully self tapes are like from the waist up. So you couldn't really tell what I had on bottom, but I basically just had on like a tank top. And I tried to learn some lines as fast as I could. And then my oldest niece came in and she was with a friend and her friend came in as well. And one of them held my iPhone. The other one ran lines with me. I think I did like one or two takes. So we're in this beach house, right? My backdrop is like literally the picture of like a fish. It's like turquoise and like pinks and greens, but it was the only place in the house with decent enough lighting to where you could see my face everywhere else. Cause it was starting to get dark Florida time at this point, you know, cause we're 3 hours ahead.
Yeah.
And I was on a big time crunch because, you know, we had dinner reservations that we couldn't miss. And so we're literally on our way out. So I had to put on tape, whatever I could get on tape. And there were three scenes and I could only get two on. Cause you know, at this point, my family was like, we gotta go. It was so chaotic. And so finally I got something in. I emailed it to my agent and I kid you not, this was the worst self-tape audition I think I've ever done in my entire 26 year and a half, like my 26 year professional career. And of course, lo and behold, I get it.
Of course. Which means,
so, you know,
which means we're going to see it on the DVD extras, if they're still doing it.
For the love of God, I hope not. I turned it to the agent and then I didn't hear. That was like on a Thursday evening because they had a casting session here in LA that afternoon. And then I got back in town on Saturday and I heard Tuesday morning that I had booked it. And I was like, and I thought my agent was like pulling a joke on me because I was like, are you kidding? That was the worst tape of my entire career. And are you sure they want me? So but what ended up happening is my agent actually ended up sending them, my reel, you know, we actors have, you know, like a professional reel that has a bunch of scenes from, you know, an accumulation of scenes from some, you know, jobs that we've done. And so that's actually what got me the job, I believe. So at least that's kind of what I was told, which thank God for reels, because that's what saved me.
Sounds like a more likely story. But
yeah, hey,
clearly there was a lot of interest. So just for those of us who aren't familiar with the process, what would have put you on their radar to the point where they wanted to see your tape so badly then? Was it something like a prior relationship with anybody related to the show? Had you worked with anyone?
Well, first of all, the casting director, I just have known, you know, throughout the years from auditioning, you know, just over the years that I've been out here. But I, you know, I hadn't seen her in person in a long time. And so then, but her associate, Stephanie, she knew who I was because we, this is so nuts. So I have this like poker group on Wednesday nights, right? And it's got, you know, some industry people. It's got some industry people in it. Now, Stephanie has never been to poker, but she's in our message thread. So she's always invited, so she sees all the messages. And so I guess Stephanie had seen my messages, and this is over like months and months and months, right? And so I guess she thought I would be perfect for it. And of course, they all knew who I was. Like, from what I understand, maybe there was a producer in there somewhere that was familiar with my work. But I mean, Cassie, you know, was familiar with my work. So, I mean, when you're 26, you're established veteran, they have a good idea of your resume. So I had that going for me. But I believe it was what really was a good push was Cassie really pushed it. And I guess someone over at B99 liked me a lot. And I got lucky.
You know, it's amazing. And to see you on the show, to watch the episode, and I'll be honest with you, I hadn't seen much of the show before. So I went and I watched the episode that you were in that night. And I guess I had kind of forgotten how fast-paced that show could be, the dialogue.
Oh, my God.
The way that it moves. And I was just so, to me, it was just a very impressive thing to see the usual cast of characters perform in that environment and at that pace. But to see you slip in for that episode and keep up and feel very much a part of that system, how much of an adjustment is that for you to slide into that environment?
Oh my God. It's so funny you ask that, because I hadn't, you know, I was very familiar with the show. I had definitely seen, you know, a lot of episodes throughout all the different seasons. You know, I'll be honest, I haven't seen every single episode, but I definitely had seen a number of them. And I knew that it was very fast paced, but I did not realize just how fast it was. I remember before we started shooting, we have what's called a table read, and it's where as much as the cast as possible, and the producers and the director and the DP, and it's, you know, it's some of the crew, and you know, and the network and studio, and they're all there, and you do a table read. You do like a read through of the script so that, you know, they can hear it out loud, and so people can meet each other. And anyway, I remember the note that I got from casting before that table read was, keep your pace up. The pace has to be fast. It has to be fast. It's a very fast paced show. You have to throw everything out there really quickly. And I'm like, oh God. Now, mind you, Brooklyn Nine-Nine was my return to comedy. Like, I hadn't done comedy in years. Like, I mean, I had done many comedy TV shows, like, back in the day, but it just so happens, you know, for well over a decade or so, it just so happens the 1 hour procedural episodics had, you know, been my bread and butter for so long. So this was my return to comedy. And on top of it, to go on a show that is extremely fast paced, and that is partially due to Andy Samberg from Saturday Night Live. He was trained on there for 6 years, and, you know, with improv, and it's just a really fast pace in their comedy as well. So he brought that into this show, and they just spew everything out. And so it's actually very difficult to do. It's really hard.
It just seems like a very high level of skill to be able to not only pull that level of comedy off, but to be able to do it in such a way where everyone is kind of on that same pace and on that same page.
Yeah. And I mean, and you know, they're used to it. They're used to it. So like, they're more accustomed to it. And here I am, not only is, you know, this is my return to comedy, and it's like, oh, we have to be super fast. You know, when I'm used to doing a 1 hour procedural where I'm having to investigate a murder and a crime, and there's people crying, or I'm the one dead, it's a little bit different, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Did you find, you know, from that opening experience from the table read, did you find that you were able to feel a level of chemistry with the rest of the cast, or was it?
Yeah. Instantaneously. I can honestly say, you know, and I've done a lot of shows. I've been fortunate enough to do a ton of TV shows, and both comedy and dramas. And this cast, when I was walking into the building in the lobby before we were about to ride the elevator up into the conference room for the table read, Terry Crews was the first person that I met. And I mean, he saw me and he just had his arms wide open. He's like, hey! I mean, this is the nicest, most down-to-earth, easygoing, warm, welcoming, professional cast, I think, in all of network television. They are just super cool. They are your friends, your neighbors. They are just the coolest and really easy to work with. And they make you feel so, so welcome and a part of the family, even if you are just a guest star and recurring. They make you feel like you're a series regular. Like, they're truly amazing. And the chemistry, it's not, they make it so easy to have the chemistry because they're all just so funny and just nice people. And the table read was super fun because everybody's laughing at everything. And the writing is just, you know, second to none. Like, it's just incredible. You know, that show's a really funny show. And so you have all the correct ingredients put together to make this really brilliant comedy, and to have actors who are actually super nice in person makes it that much easier. I had a blast on that show. I can't say enough good things about it.
It's an interesting thing that you bring up, because when you think about the great comedies, whether it's this style of comedy like The Office, Parks and Rec, and of course Brooklyn Nine-Nine, or just more traditional sitcoms of the past, the one thing you hear time and time again is the cast were very tight. They loved each other. They had a true sense of family. Do you think there's a correlation between that and a successful comedy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. For sure. I think that it definitely plays, it's probably the main element. To have chemistry on screen when the cameras are rolling, you know, that's a gift. That is something that, you know, whether or not it's just natural or whether it's manufactured, because some actors can manufacture it, you know what I mean? When they're in the moment and the cameras are rolling. But you can't fake it. You can't fake chemistry. So the chemistry has to be this organic, natural element that is just created by all the energies involved. And that's what makes it work, because comedy is hard. Comedy is all about timing, all about delivery. It's all about pacing. It's so much harder. People think drama is harder, but no, comedy is way harder, actually. I think that when you are a family, when the cameras aren't rolling, when you truly, genuinely like the people that you're working with, and it's an environment where you feel at home, then the chemistry is going to be easy for it to portray on camera, on screen. And it should be, really, essentially. You do hear about problematic actors that don't get along, and that becomes a pain in the butt, because that really adds all this tension and stress. Because not only when those cameras, when they yell cut and the camera stops rolling, that energy just continues when you're at craft service. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants tension and you know, that kind of like walking on eggshells feeling. Like, you want to be able to go to work every day and enjoy what you're doing and feel at ease and peace of mind. And so if you lack that, I don't see how a show can carry on for too long with an energy that's overbearing. That's, you know, kind of, it's almost like having a dark cloud over you, you know, and for comedies, your sky's got to be clear.
Sunny days. Absolutely.
Sunny days.
I've already got the Sesame Street song in my head. I got kids, so, you know.
Well, there you go.
So, listen, let's talk about the episode for a minute here, or, you know.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're here to talk about. Now, this was, I believe, episode number 2 of the current season of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Correct.
Yep. Part of the hour-long premiere, so a lot of eyeballs on this episode.
Yeah.
And this was a big deal because this was carrying over a storyline where Holt had become just one of the cops, just one of the guys and gals, so to speak. And there was a new quote unquote sheriff in town, actually a captain, and her name was Captain.
I was
going
to say, Captain,
yeah.
To be exact.
if we've been following you on social media, we know absolutely, because the Bring Back Captain Kim outcry has been loud, clear, and persistent ever since that episode aired. And for very good reason, because your character of Captain Kim was really a difficult one to pull off, I thought. I thought it was really interesting to look at this character that came to the 99 and had to be this very good, almost too good to be true individual.
Yeah.
And the question is she actually that good or too good to be true? That was kind of the thing that you had to balance as that question hung over you.
Yes, yes. And it's funny because before the episode aired, this is a show that's, you know, a well-oiled machine and has been on, you know, this is the 7th season. So, you know, this is a well-established show with well-established fans that were, you know, diehard loyals. And they weren't really that excited about the idea of a new captain coming to town, you know, to the precinct. So, and understandably so, I don't blame them, because, you know, Holt has been the captain since they've been there. And yeah, they've had other captains kind of come in and out, but to have their papa bear, if you will, in that position and so loved and adored and then often be demoted to, he's actually, I think it's like a traffic cop. I mean, literally, it's so funny how these creators are hysterical. Like, they just come up with the most genius storylines. It could be different, you know, because you got to make each season different as the show evolves. It's just a really funny idea to have the captain, all of a sudden he gets demoted to traffic cop. Like, that never happens. That's amazing. Like, how funny is that? So, you know, this new captain comes to town, and that's kind of what, you know, that they were going for, because they'd had other captains kind of come in and fill in where either it was too good to be true, or they'd just been a disaster, or they were nightmares, or just irresponsible, it just didn't work. And they actually wanted to bring in a captain, a female captain, that actually wasn't too good to be true, that actually really was just as nice as she was coming across. And was the real deal and legit. You know, there's no games, she wasn't trying to manipulate anyone. She truly is the real deal. And I'm glad they did that. You know, I'm glad they decided to make Captain Kim genuine and really just likable. And then, of course, you know, Peralta, Jake Peralta, you know, ends up chasing her out. and which the fans actually favored. They favored Captain Kim. It was funny. My character actually ends up just reassigning herself to a different precinct. But fingers crossed, hopefully there is definitely space for it to be open. So I have not heard anything yet if I'm going to return or not. But this show does tend to like to sometimes bring back some of their past guest stars for, you know, popular characters. So fingers crossed, we'll see. But I mean, I would love nothing more than to go back because it's definitely kind of the door sort of open for that as a potential possibility. Fans, you were right, though. The fans went ballistic. I was not anticipating the outpour from the fans to be as overwhelming and supportive as it ended up being. I mean, I literally got hundreds and hundreds of messages on all social media, on Instagram and Twitter. People were like crying to me in my private message box. I miss Captain Kim. The show had just aired like 5 minutes before. Like, people were like saying, we miss Captain Kim. I'm like, but it just aired. Very, very sweet. I mean, everyone was like, you know, we love Holt. I'm like, look, no one's replacing Holt. Holt is Holt. He's irreplaceable. You know, Andre Brower's brilliant on that show. He's just brilliant, dead hysterical. He's not going anywhere. He's just been demoted for a year. But the fans just went nuts. And I was really sort of like, whoa, I wasn't anticipating. I was hoping for, she did a good job. The fans were nothing but supportive. They're like, they really need to bring Captain Kim back. There were some fans that even got mad. I was almost speechless and with a lot of the comments, but certainly just overwhelmingly flattered and grateful that the fans embraced Captain Kim as much as they did.
I watched it and I said to myself, I'd like to see her come back. I mean,
yeah, you know, these fans are crazy. They're so smart. I don't know how they come up.
Yeah, they're going to fill in the blanks for you no matter what happens. You know, I was curious in watching the episode because, you know, I mentioned The Office before. And one of the most critically acclaimed episodes of The Office is The Dinner Party, which was filmed in Michael Scott's condo. It was filmed in a real condo. And many cast members have talked about how it was very tight and very confining. And that sort of added to the episode. Was that the sort of environment that you experienced in filming the scenes at Captain Kim's house party?
Well, here's what happened. So I throw this party. Captain right. Kim throws this party. And what ends up happening, you know, as you know, Holt and Peralta, they're on a mission. They think Captain Kim is up to something. She can't possibly be this nice. So
right. They
go to her house and they snoop around. They break into her bedroom. They break into her office. They're, you know, and so what ends up happening is my dog ends up getting out because Peralta didn't know that there was a dog locked up and ends up getting out. The dog runs downstairs, goes haywire to the whole party. My house ends up being destroyed. Furniture ripped, couches ripped, chairs ripped, lamps knocked over. There's just debris everywhere. So that's what I get for inviting the 99th precinct over to my house for a house party.
Yeah.
But there definitely was there was a great scene in the kitchen where it's all of us, it's the whole cast, you know, and we're talking, and basically it's Peralta having to come clean and all the truths come out, and you know, it's you find out why Captain Kim chose the 99th precinct because they don't have the best reputation in the NYPD, and you know, why would the first Asian American female captain want to come to this precinct? And you find out because, well, Holt is her hero and it's genuine and he was an inspiration for her and she really is that nice. And then Peralta gets caught and everybody's like, oh, she's so nice. And, you know, she's trying to hook all the other people up, meeting people that can help them and further their careers or help their families out or kids out. So Captain Kim was just a nice person. So like that whole scene in there was definitely a situation where there's that connection, that bonding, that where everything kind of comes together. It's just me personally. I think it would be funny if, like, I think keep Captain Kim as genuine as she is. Like, she's likable. Everyone loves her. She's the real deal. But I think it'd be funny, like, what if, like, they go back to find her? Like, let's get Captain Kim. You know, let's get her back. They go back to get her, and then they just give her, like, some, like, double life she has. Like, I don't know. Maybe she moonlight as, like, a pole dancer. Not a stripper, but a pole dancer. Maybe she has, like, some crazy habit, you know, that that
they're not like, a stripper. Why are we drawing a line?
No, the line needs to, we need to keep Captain Kim wholesome because she is wholesome.
Okay.
But like, you know, what if there's something that's kind of like, oh, like makes you raise your eyebrow, you know, innocent Captain Kim, to do like a hobby on the weekends or on a Tuesday night. I don't know.
Right. She's not hurting anybody, but you know,
she likes to do a few little pole tricks. Who cares?
Sure.
It's harmless.
Hey, it's good exercise. Absolutely.
It absolutely is good exercise.
I like it. I think that, you know, you're at the very least fueling a whole lot of fan fiction right now, and hopefully at the best, giving some writers some ideas to get you back on our TV screens. I think that's what many people, they want to see. We want to see Captain Kim back.
Again, I can't thank the fans enough for all their out support and love. It has truly been just overwhelmingly humbling and the most lovely surprise ever. So I mean, the Brooklyn Nine-Nine fans are the best. They've all been truly amazing.
Awesome, awesome. Now, while we're waiting to see what happens with Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you're as busy as ever, as we know. So what else is going on?
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm actually about to start a new series, a new show that has that's going to air on Freeform and Hulu, and it'll premiere in the summer. And it's set in the 90s. How cool is that?
Nice.
The show is called Last Summer. Jessica Biel is one of the executive producers, and it's an incredible. Burt V. Royal is the showrunner and creator. He wrote it. Brilliant genius mind and longtime dear friend. And so I get to the show shoots in Dallas, Texas, and which is where I'm originally from. So I get to work on this awesome thriller, suspense, mystery TV series back in my hometown. So I'm super excited about that.
Are we going to get to hear your Texas accent reemerge?
Possibly. There might be a chance of that. It hasn't been confirmed yet, but there could be a chance of that. I mean, it is Texas, so. No, you can follow me on Instagram. I am at Lady Bilderback. And Twitter is the same. Both Twitter and Instagram are at Lady Bilderback. And on Facebook, I'm Nikki Bilderback.
Nikki.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure. Always good to catch up with you. And thank you for dealing with my illness. Thank you for carrying the load here and bringing us back into your life.
Oh, it is always my pleasure. I always have such a great fun time with you. And you know what? Hey, you hand the mic over and you let me just go. So. So I always appreciate that, and we always have a lot of fun, so anytime.
Guys, the Laugh Track podcast is produced and hosted by me, Jerry Strauss, with editing and additional production by our buddy Steve Prentice. We will be expanding in the next few weeks, guys, so keep a lookout for all kinds of big announcements. In the meantime, if you want to drop me a line, please do so. Let me know what you think of the show, comments, questions, complaints, suggestions. Just do so, please. You can reach me at laughtrackpod at outlook.com, old-fashioned email. And Twitter. We are on Twitter, so please hit us up there. LaughTrackTV is the handle there. And again, our Facebook page as well. The Laugh Track with Jerry Strauss Facebook page is out there. We encourage you to like it and stay in touch with us that way as well. And please, wherever you get your podcast, wherever, however you are hearing this show, please subscribe. It'll ease you of the responsibility of having to remember when this show comes out, having to download it. It's going to be there automatically for you as soon as we drop new episodes. So go ahead. It's free. There's no better bargain than free. So please do that. And while you're out there, please consider leaving a review. That helps us greatly. And tell a friend. Tell two. Tell as many people as you think might be interested in this show. We have a lot of fun here, and we want more and more people to join in on that fun. Until next time, folks, thank you so much for checking us out. I am Jerry Strauss. Stay safe out there. Stay well. And we'll see you next time.